Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring collaborative innovation and design thinking. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Absolutely. There is a lot to get into today.
Yeah. So, okay, let's unpack this, because I think we have to start by talking about this myth we all kind of hold on to.
The lone genius myth.
Right, exactly. Like, imagine trying to design a commercial airplane by yourself.
Oh, you can.
No. I mean, the aerodynamics, the software, the seating logistics, it's just impossible for one human mind to hold all that expertise, you know?
Right.
But for some reason, we're still obsessed with the idea of the brilliant visionary, like Steve Jobs archetype.
Oh, yeah. Locked in a basement somewhere.
Yeah. Having a sudden eureka moment and just emerging with this perfect world-changing idea. But that just isn't how true innovation happens, is it?
Not at all. I mean, it's a very romantic narrative. But it is historically and practically false.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a dangerous myth because it sets impossible expectations for you when you're entering the workforce. When we look at how significant breakthroughs actually happen, whether that's in tech or business or social systems, they are incredibly messy.
Right. Lots of trial and error.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Deeply, deeply collaborative. Real innovation is born from teamwork, relentless experimentation, and most importantly, user-centered thinking.
Which is really the core of what we're talking about today.
Right. You don't just invent in a vacuum. You solve a specific problem for a specific group of people.
Yeah, it makes me think of cooking. Like, if you're cooking a meal for someone else.
Okay, I like that.
You can't just cook your own favorite food.
Right.
Like, I love incredible spicy curry. But if I cook that for a guest without asking them,
it might be totally miserable.
Exactly. You have to actually investigate what they like to eat or if they have any dietary needs.
Right. Which brings us directly to the two main pillars of our deep dive today. First, we have design thinking.
The cooking for your guest part.
Exactly. It's essentially a methodology that flips the traditional script. Instead of starting with a brilliant product idea and trying to find a market to sell it to, you start with the person who actually has a problem.
You empathize with them.
Yes, you empathize, define their friction points, and build solutions around those exact needs. And then the second pillar is collaboration.
Because, I mean, my blind spots are covered by your insights.
Precisely. Design thinking ensures you are solving the right problem, and collaboration ensures you are bringing the best possible solution to the table.
Right.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is exactly why mastering collaborative innovation is so critical for the modern professional.
Because the nature of work is changing so fast.
Yeah, exactly. The future workplace is no longer about executing, you know, isolated, repetitive tasks. It's about navigating complex, interconnected systems.
Right. The simple tasks are all getting automated anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're seeing that the professionals who master these skills naturally evolve into indispensable leaders.
Right.
Because they know how to navigate ambiguity.
They don't panic when they don't have the answer right away.
Right. They don't freeze. They know how to build a team to go find the answer together.
I love the theory behind that, but I have to push back here a little bit, just based on real world experience. I think a lot of people listening have been in corporate brainstorming sessions or like group projects in college that were just absolute nightmares.
Oh, definitely.
Doesn't putting a bunch of people in a room to collaborate just lead to, you know, groupthink? Or those endless unproductive meetings where two executives argue for an hour over whether a website button should be blue or red.
And nothing actually gets built.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're touching on a very real psychological trap. And it's exactly what happens when collaboration lacks structure.
Okay. So structure is the missing piece.
Right. The human brain naturally gravitates toward consensus to avoid conflict.
Which causes the groupthink.
Yes. Or, alternatively, people just defer to the highest paid person in the room.
Right. The boss says it's red, so it's red.
Exactly. But structure design thinking completely neutralizes those traps through a specific cadence of divergent and convergent thinking.
Divergent and convergent, meaning like flaring out with ideas and then narrowing back down.
You got it. Unstructured meetings try to do both at the exact same time. Someone pitches an idea and someone else immediately shoots it down.
Oh, I've been in that meeting. It's exhausting.
Right. Because it kills momentum. Structured design thinking separates them. First, you diverge. You generate hundreds of ideas without any judgment.
Like anything goes.
Anything goes. Then you converge to select the best ones. And regarding the executives arguing over the button color.
Yeah, how do we stop that?
Design thinking ends that debate instantly through rapid prototyping. Instead of arguing for 2 hours, you take 10 minutes to build one red button and one blue button.
And you just put it in front of people.
Exactly. You put it in front of 10 actual users and let the data decide.
Oh, wow. That takes the ego completely out of it.
That's the goal. The focus shifts from whose idea sounds smartest in the conference room to what actually solves the user's problem in practice. The user's reality becomes the ultimate judge, which just completely bypasses office politics.
That makes total sense. Prototyping beats debating every single time. But that actually leads perfectly into my next question about the logistics of this.
Okay.
Because how do we actually execute this structured collaboration today? I mean, we aren't always sitting in the same physical conference room with a giant stack of physical sticky notes.
Very true.
We are in a highly digital, geographically distributed environment. Like, how does a remote team practically make this happen?
Well, the transition to digital hasn't changed the core principles of design thinking, but it has absolutely revolutionized the execution.
In a good way.
In a fantastic way. The foundational strategies remain the same. You know, encourage open idea sharing, focus on user experiences, and iterate. But in a digital environment, the speed and equity of how we do these things have increased exponentially.
Largely thanks to the tools we have now, I imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah, the materials we're looking at specifically highlight tools like Miro, Figma, and Canva. Mm-hmm. And having used them, I know they aren't just like digital replacements for paper.
No, they're entirely new collaborative ecosystems.
Yeah. I always think of tools like Miro or Figma as having this infinite virtual whiteboard. It's this space where diverse perspectives can just collide in real time.
Right. No matter where anyone is sitting.
Exactly. You could have a systems architect in Tokyo, a researcher in London, and a project manager in New York. And they're all dragging and dropping ideas, sketching out user flows, and iterating simultaneously.
And let's dig into the psychological mechanism of why those tools are so effective.
Okay, yeah.
Because in a physical conference room, physical presence dictates power. The loudest, most extroverted person usually dominates the whiteboard.
Right. They stand up, they hold the marker.
Yes. They hold the marker and they control the flow of ideas, which can be incredibly intimidating for an introverted team member.
Or just someone who needs a few minutes to process their thoughts before speaking.
Exactly. But digital tools democratize that process through what we call cursor equity.
Cursor equity. I love that term.
Right. When you are on a Miro board, everyone has a cursor. The quietest person in the room can drop a brilliantly insightful sticky note onto the board just as easily and at the exact same time as the loudest person.
It completely removes the social pressure of having to interrupt someone.
Exactly. Asynchronous digital collaboration ensures that diverse perspectives aren't just invited, they are actually captured and integrated into the final prototype.
That is so powerful. I want to move from these sort of abstract digital concepts to a concrete reality.
Let's do it.
Let's look at the real world case study from our lesson materials just to see how this methodology actually saves projects.
Ah, the student innovation team.
Yes. So there was the student innovation team that was struggling with incredibly low event participation. They were securing funding, booking venues, putting all this effort into hosting these events, and essentially nobody was showing up.
What's fascinating here is the instinctual response for most teams in that situation is to just sit in a room and guess.
Yeah, they rely on assumptions.
Right. They say, well, students today are just apathetic, or, you know, maybe we need to buy better pizza.
Let's send more annoying emails.
Exactly. They try to solve the problem from their own perspective. But this student team paused and applied design thinking instead.
Right. They stopped guessing and actually went to the audience.
And what they discovered completely disproved their assumptions.
Right. They found out that the students weren't lazy or apathetic at all. The problem was entirely systemic.
Right. The registration portal.
Yeah. They discovered that over 80% of potential attendees were dropping off the registration page because the portal required them to manually input a legacy 12-digit student ID number.
Which nobody's memorized.
Yeah. Exactly. So students would click the link while they were, you know, walking to class, see the ID requirement, close the tab, and just forget about it.
It was a purely operational friction point. And once the team identified that specific user need, the need for a seamless on-the-go registration process, they could rapidly prototype a solution.
Right. They scrapped the legacy system, put in a simple QR code sign-on, and attendance basically tripled overnight.
And the takeaway here for everyone listening is that this scenario isn't just a cute story about university events.
No, not at all.
It perfectly mirrors the exact process of how future workplaces solve massive, complex problems.
Whether you are fixing a campus event or restructuring like global supply chain software for a Fortune 500 company,
the methodology is identical. You do not rely on boardroom assumptions. You redesign the system based on actual, observed user friction.
That ability to locate and eliminate friction is why these skills are so highly valued. But this actually brings up a slightly heavier topic.
Okay, let's get into it.
Gathering all this behavioral data and designing systems that shape how people interact, that holds a tremendous amount of power.
It does.
If user-centered innovation requires us to solve real problems, how do we make sure we are doing this responsibly? Like, how do we ensure we aren't just projecting our own biases onto the user?
Right. And inadvertently building something that is exclusionary.
Exactly.
That goes straight to the heart of responsible use and design thinking. It requires profound self-awareness and rigorous testing.
How so?
Well, responsible use means recognizing the trap of confirmation bias. It is very, very easy for a design team to fall in love with their own prototype.
Oh, sure. You spent weeks on it. You want it to work.
Right. And then you unconsciously steer user interviews, or you manipulate the data to validate the solution you already want to build.
So it's not enough to just build something and then find a group of users to validate it.
No, because validation isn't the goal. Learning is the goal.
I like that.
Responsible innovation means you have to test fairly. You have to actively seek out the edge cases, the users who might struggle with your system, or those who interact with technology differently.
So if you're designing a new digital tool and you only test it with highly tech-savvy early adopters,
you aren't doing responsible design. You are creating an exclusionary product.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to look at hard data, listen to frustrating feedback, and let your favorite idea die if the users tell you it doesn't serve them.
Wow. It takes a lot of professional humility to admit your brilliant idea is actually creating more friction.
It really does.
So for the person listening who wants to internalize this, who wants to get better at finding that friction and building real solutions, let's pivot to some actionable advice.
Right.
How can they start building confidence with these collaborative innovation skills right now? The lesson outlines a 5-step framework.
Yes.
Let's actually walk through it together with a real-world example.
Let's do it. The best way to build this muscle is through immediate practice. So step one is to choose a common challenge you face in your daily life or work.
Okay, let's use a classic hybrid work problem.
Okay.
Step one, my team's weekly Monday morning sync meeting is terrible.
Oh, universal experience.
Right. It takes an hour, everyone is bored, and we still end up confused about who is doing what for the rest of the week. It's a broken system.
Perfect example. Step two is to identify the specific user needs surrounding that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you and your colleagues are the users.
Right.
So what is the actual friction? Why is it broken?
Well, if I empathize with the team, the friction is that half the people are dialing in remotely and can't hear well, and the other half are just reading updates aloud that could have been an email.
Right.
So the core need isn't a better meeting. The core need is clear alignment on weekly priorities without wasting an hour of deep work time.
Now we are getting somewhere. So here is step three, brainstorm solutions. And remember the rule of divergent thinking, quantity over quality. No bad ideas at this stage.
Okay, brainstorming. We could cancel the meeting entirely.
Good.
We could make everyone stand up so it goes faster. We could replace it with a shared digital dashboard. Or we could do asynchronous audio updates.
Excellent. Step four, design a simple prototype idea.
Okay.
Pick one of those brainstorm solutions and make a testable version of it. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't take you weeks to build. It should take an hour.
All right, let's prototype the asynchronous update. So my prototype is this. For the next 2 Mondays, there is no meeting.
People will love that.
Right. Instead, I'll create a structured Slack thread on Monday at 9 a.m., and everyone has to reply with 3 bullet points, what they are doing, what they need help with, and what is blocking them.
That is a highly testable prototype, which brings us to the final step, step five. Evaluate possible improvements.
So that's the feedback loop.
Exactly. You run the Slack thread prototype for 2 weeks, and then you gather data. You ask the team, did this save you time? Did you still feel aligned?
And maybe the text updates felt too impersonal.
All right, so for the next iteration, you try short voice memos instead.
Yeah.
You iterate based on the feedback.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because you don't have to figure all of these brainstorming exercises and prototyping methods out on your own.
Oh, not at all.
If you want to dive deeper into the actual mechanics of how to run these sessions, there is a massive wealth of educational resources available to you.
Absolutely.
The materials we're looking at explicitly point to the Stanford D-School, MIT Innovation Resources, and Harvard Innovation Resources.
Yeah.
These institutions have essentially open-sourced incredible toolkits, case studies, and frameworks that you can access completely for free to level up your professional toolkit.
And utilizing those resources is a perfect example of digital adaptability. You are taking the initiative to learn from the best global practices and integrating them into your own workflow.
So as we wrap up today, we've covered an immense amount of ground.
We really have.
We've busted the lone genius myth, explored the cursor equity of virtual whiteboards, dissected how to avoid confirmation bias in testing, and walked through a practical five-step framework to fix broken systems.
This raises an important question, and it's the core reflection prompt we want to leave you with today. How can collaboration and design thinking improve your personal innovation outcomes?
Oh, that's a great question.
Think about the projects or workflows you are dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. Where are you relying on assumptions instead of gathering actual feedback?
Yeah.
Where are you trying to be a lone genius when you should be leveraging a collaborative team?
That is a phenomenal lens to view your daily work through. Mastering these techniques, empathy, rapid prototyping, structured collaboration, these are the exact capabilities that build true digital adaptability and really future-proof your career.
Definitely.
Remember that experimentation and even negative feedback are not signs of failure. They are the literal engines of continuous improvement. If you aren't iterating, you aren't innovating. So we really want to encourage you to stay curious, remain responsible and objective in your designs, and keep making yourself future ready.
And as you continue your learning journey, please make sure to review your end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities provided in your course.
Yes, very important.
To truly ground this knowledge, we also highly recommend checking out the foundational reference materials that inform the core concepts of today's deep dive.
They're so good.
Specifically, we suggest reading Creative Confidence by Tom and David Kelly, published in 2013. The seminal work, The Design of Everyday Things by Don Norman, originally published in 1988 and revised in 2013. And Sprint by Jake Knapp, published in 2016.
Absolute classics.
These texts are absolute touchstones in the field and will profoundly deepen your understanding of how to build better solutions.
They really will completely change how you view the world around you.
Oh, yeah.
You will never look at a confusing door handle, a poorly run meeting, or a frustrating website the exact same way again. Because once you understand the mechanics of design thinking, you realize that everything around us is simply a prototype. It's just waiting to be improved by someone willing to ask the user what they actually need. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here.
Thank you, and keep innovating.